Welcome everyone back to Startup Stories podcast and also video. And today we have a very familiar face to technologists, researchers, and entrepreneurs in the state of Iowa. So joining us today for Startup Podcast is going to be Anne McMahon. So welcome, Anne.
Hi, Diana. Thank you.
Yeah, so Annie is joining us from BioConnect Iowa. You lead a number of the, or you lead all of the SBIR STTR programs in the state. And can you kind of, before we begin into talking about BioConnect and your role, can we rewind quite a bit? And when you were young, did you ever think you would be a champion for entrepreneurs in the state of Iowa? What did you think you would be when you were going to grow up?
That's a packed question, Diana. So I'm the youngest.
We're going right into it.
That's okay. And the only girl. And so I kind of held the helm of like my brothers and my family sort of in the middle. And so I sort of always like to be in the know of what's going on and what they're doing and seeing if I can connect them or help them or listen to their, you know, their problems and whatnot. And so maybe not specifically in entrepreneurship, but yeah, I always felt like I'd be kind of in the middle, leading something or helping something get better. And so, yes, I would say yes to that. What I wanted to be when I grow up, I always aligned things with, my name. So I'm Anne or Annie, as if you know me better. And so I was either going to be an astronaut or an architect. I always like to go on like explorations and do interesting things. And as technology advances, I may get to the moon one day. I always tell my nephew who's 8 that we're going to the moon, even if it's just the two of us, as well as an architect. I don't know, I always sort of liked design of things, the way things work and trying to help people create things that they enjoy and could use in a positive manner.
Cool. I mean, and I know I can speak that you guys, you have a great eye for design. So I feel like you still carry that with you, even with all the different art and design that you collect. Can you talk about that actually, kind of the artist side of collecting and supporting the artists?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I wouldn't necessarily call myself a collector. I have lots of pieces of art that I love. And so I buy what I love, not by like obvious dollar amount or by artist. But yeah, so we've got 3 pretty significant pieces in our home bought by my husband and I, supporting a local artist, Matt Crohn's. He operates out of Mainframe, but also I think he's in Denver doing some more schooling and teaching. So we try to pick up pieces here and there. We also have a small little picture of downtown Cedar Falls. My cousin used to live there and we used to go there every year in the fall and visit her. And it's got Cup of Joe and some other little shops downtown. So that's memorable. The poster behind me is a poster my grandparents actually framed for my mom. My mom, it's a Red Bright. It came through my mom's hometown, Eldora, Iowa, the day I was born in July. So that's kind of a significant piece. Collect, yeah, but we collect things that we love, places we've been, things that are more meaningful rather than dollar driven. Mm-hmm. And we have a very eclectic style. So lots of color, lots of funky pieces. It goes together in our heart and makes our home happy. So that's kind of how we see it.
So can you talk about kind of growing up or to where you are now, a influential person in your life? And where maybe how that's caused you to be in the role that you are today or in the world of entrepreneurship?
Yeah. So I sort of have a person and some specific moments. I would say the person would probably be my dad. So he left IBM when it wasn't cool to leave a company with, you know, promises of things for a family and that sort of thing. So he left IBM late 70s, early 80s and went back to school, went to law school. And became an attorney and worked with one partner and then bought that partnership out. So my whole childhood watched him merge a partnership at a small defense law firm in Mason City and be a prominent lawyer in that town, as well as provide for his family and do fun things as a dad would do, as well as sort of like he's merged back with a different firm and sort of retiring. So I've seen that come full circle. So I'd say my dad, for sure, always volunteering, involved in the community, as well as doing fun things with us in the summer. We traveled a lot in the winter for hockey. My brothers both played hockey and I figure skates. We were kind of always on the road, a different hotel room with our hockey family every weekend. So that was always really fun. And then now, like, I'll talk a little bit about influential moments, in high school, like an intro to business class, right? I just ate that up. Tracy Peterson taught that, at Clear Lake High School. And so we were going to design a business. Mine was always going to be a shoe store, right? A brick and mortar with, yes, on hand inventory, which I know scares a lot of people, but I was always going to, and may still someday have a shoe store. So that was really fun. And then on to, NIAC, or North Iowa Area Community College, down the road from Clear Lake. Mason City has a very, wonderful community college, as well as a Papa John Center. And so I was one of, like, the first or second, high school students through Youth Entrepreneur Academy, which was very, very fun. We built a business there, a team of five of us. It was called Rock Solid. And so we were going to go into farmers and farms and collect rocks, right? Because when you farm, rocks are a nuisance. We were going to sell those to construction companies. A very, very large bank was just built on a corner of Clear Lake. And so we thought, oh, we can take those rocks. And if this bank and this construction company would use those, so would other construction companies, and they're building and landscaping. And then on to college. Yeah, I went to the University of Iowa, and I lived in Courier Hall. Those were the days, a while back. And I lived on a business and leadership community floor. And so our entire floor, our co-ed floor, went to a specific class every week. It happened to be with also the University of Iowa JPEC. So I sort of found a home there as well, a student worker, took all the programs, and was a student worker in the office and whatnot. And I still sit on the alumni advisory board for the University of Iowa John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center. So those were some, like, influential moments. Like, I remember going from the dorm room down to JPEC, the business building, and in loving that class, and just, you didn't have to, you know, have necessarily a traditional 8-to-5 and whatnot. And then what else led me to that? I also used to nanny. So I kind of, got a little bit of everything going on. I worked retail right out of college to try to get some experience for the shoe store. And then I nannied. So I worked, for 4 years, 1 year actually in Washington, DC, which was really fun. It's where the family that I worked for lived, to watch the world go by with a dog and a baby. And then we all moved back to Des Moines. And so I finished that out. So those would be some moments. And of course, my dad as the influential person.
Mm-hmm. And you and I, we have a very similar path in that we grew up with a family member or family, an entrepreneurial family. And also through the JPEC system, having a lot of influence in those moments of whether it was high school or all the way through college, being able to be part of a number of the entrepreneurship programs in that university setting. So I guess kind of even where things are today with the universities, and I know you've worked a lot with the Iowa JPEC Papa John Center. What kind of excites you about what's happening at the university setting in Iowa? I know, and this will kind of go into, you know, you work with now a lot of researchers at different universities, but what's kind of exciting for you to see at the moment?
Great question. So I think all five centers, if we're going to go mm-hmm. JPEC, are all very unique in their own way. And I think they serve their people and their communities the way that they should. Specifically at Iowa, there's been some legislation, potentially a fund. So all those companies that the University of Iowa helps within their center, they can maybe give them some, you know, pick 10, right? Hypothetically, hopefully there's 10 in the pipeline, give 10 of them some funding, some early stage funding, and then maybe see a return and or put that into other companies and other interesting ventures. And so that's early stage, just was in legislation, I don't know, introduced probably a month or two ago. And so it's early, but I think that's very exciting that they can own some of their own babies that they have helped grow from introduction freshman year through the Bedell all the way up from the entrepreneurial side. And I think in my day job, if you want me to get into that, Diana, now.
To clarify, one sec, going back to clarify with the fund, and it's for all. It's not just specific to University of Iowa. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Wanted to clarify that. Cool. So more to come. It sounds like on news on that within the state legislation. But yeah, I guess talk now about your work and specifically what you do each day at BioConnect Iowa.
Sure. So BioConnect Iowa, I'll kind of start and give you some background on what we are. People say, what? What's that? So we are a public-private partnership. We're a nonprofit, and we hold a large contract with the state of Iowa to do things, to help them do things, right? So I'm going to give you kind of what the whole function does and then what I do. So the whole function, the whole company. So we try to uncover and unlift bio-based products and bio-based chemical companies in the state of Iowa. So we're the second or third largest producer of bio-based fuels and products because of all the corn and soybean. And so in 2017, the Taconomy report came out. It's a little dated today, it being 2022, but stay tuned. There may be some more information on that coming. They wanted someone in Iowa, a group, to wake up every day and think about that. So we rebranded December of 2020 from Iowa Innovation Corporation, which people may know about, to BioConnect Iowa. And so we try to uplift and uncover in four different platforms. In the eastern side of the state, medical devices. And then here in more of the central part of the state, Iowa State University, we've got precision and digital agriculture, immunotherapeutics and vaccines, as well as bio-based chemicals and products. So it's interesting, those four platforms have someone inside the university, but they're all industry people. So it's fun to see both sides. They're trying to help faculty-led startups out of the university, but they all have industry experience too. So they kind of see both sides of the coin. So now I'll talk about my work and what I do every day. I help innovative startups obtain, if it's appropriate and they're eligible, non-dilutive federal funding. So I look for companies mostly out of the university, but a handful of private companies as well with an innovative idea. They're trying to prove feasibility, early stage, pre-seed or some seed. You can have raised some money and have a patent. That's no problem. But I run an outreach program for Small Business Innovation Research, SBIR, and STTR, Small Business Technology Transfer. So we're looking to get early stage research funding for commercialization. So phase one is all about feasibility study for some non-dilutive money. And then my outreach program connects them to some consultants to help mirror what they're trying to do with what each agency wants, with some money on top of that when awarded. And then phase two is a little bit more aggressive. So it's a year project. 2-year project, field testing, scaling, and prototyping. So every day I talk to entrepreneurs that are interested in fundraising, but sort of a different sort of fundraising. So it's not venture-backed. We're not taking any equity, but it's an interesting program. It does take a lot of time. We are, dealing with the federal government, so the timelines are long. And so don't look to something that you want to fund today. Think of something down the road. A year, year and a half, 2 years. Or if you have a technology today that's wonderful, how are we going to make it better? I always call it like version 2.0, right? Are you going to add technology to it? Are you going to have it have AI or virtual reality? Or are you going to have a robot drive it? That sort of thing.
You talk specifically too about the federal agencies, and you don't need to name them all, but maybe sure. Give a couple examples of what you've seen successful for entrepreneurs in Iowa. What agencies yes, they absolutely. Might work with, and like yeah. The long-term value of what that agency could offer.
Sure. So this program is backed by the Small Business Administration, the SBA. 11 different federal agencies fund various technologies. It is about 4% Congress mandated extramural R&D budget. And I would say each agency thinks like its own small business, works in a silo, and does their own thing, even though there are, rules and regulations. So we apply a lot to NSF, National Science Foundation, within SBIR. They're a large granting agency, very broad. They have a portfolio of about 30 companies they like to fund. So digital health, medical devices, platform technology, robotics, National Institutes of Health, NIH, is another big funder for us. More medical devices, therapeutics, that sort of thing. And then USDA is pretty obvious. It's a big funder of us here in Iowa. but also we drill down to rural and community development. So you can take a large, big, fancy existing technology and apply it to a rural setting, as well as we've seen a lot of success with education technology in a rural setting. So Parametric Studio out of Ames has a K-5 STEM education technology gaming system. So he's been very successful at USDA, National Institutes of Health, some cancer research, you know, upwards of $2 million for phase two, which is really exciting. And then National Science Foundation can kind of sort of be, it can be anything. We've got Soilsoderm out of Ames doing soil mapping and trying to help with healthier soil and what to plant where, as well as Italisi with traffic, controlling traffic and having safe intersections. So those are the big three that we fund. On the other side, there are also contracts. This is important to note. You can apply to contracts, right? Department of Defense is like, I call it the 800-pound gorilla. Definitely you can apply to that, but they come out with three different solicitations a year and you must answer to that solicitation because they want to buy something. They want to buy a spacesuit. They want to buy a robotic deck scrubber. They want to buy something for the military. And so we help try to help you find something to apply to, but just know that you can't apply to something very broad there. And we've had some recent interest in EPA. Firefly Photonics out of Iowa City has been applied to there, as well as Department of Energy. Grossman Technologies out of Ames just applied for something actually this week in Department of Energy. So we see a little bit of everything, but just on the difference between grants and contracts are important.
Yeah, and specifically on the contracts, do you have to go through the whole SBIR process to work and receive, you know, try to go for a Department of Defense contract? Or what does that look like from the entrepreneur end?
Yeah, absolutely. So I only support, maybe I should have said this earlier, my program only supports and administers SBIR and STTR projects. So very specific, right? It's economic development, it's long-term, long timelines. For very specific technology advancements. And so working with me, I would just make sure that you would apply to something within DOD's SBIR program. The solicitation comes out, you know, three times a year. We would help you look through that. Okay. And then we'd help you apply if appropriate. And then, I mean, we're not attorneys. My consultants aren't attorneys. Hopefully you have an attorney and they can help you with negotiations. But we can help you specifically with the questions they're asking if, when it relates to the program and how to navigate those.
Okay. So what does ultimately success look like in your role? Mm-hmm. Is it based off the applications and the awards? What does that look like?
Ooh, excellent. Excellent question, Diana. So success for me looks like quality applications, right? That's really the only thing that I can control. It's a very human error on the writing side as well as the reviewing because they're peer reviewed. Mm-hmm. And so they want to have someone look like them at National Science Foundation that's reviewing. I actually just talked to a client yesterday at a conference who's been invited to be a National Science Foundation reviewer, as long as his project is not under review, which it's not. So that's very exciting. So my success looks like if I can keep the national average of the program is 10 to 15%, if I can keep it to 30%. So some will still say, oh, Annie, that's still not very good. Well, that's double the national average, right? So as long as we keep the average of the entire fiscal year above 30% success rate. And everyone always asks about a return on investment too, right? So every dollar that the state invests, I need at least $10 back of federal funding. So last year it was 13, the year before it was 12. So I'm doing a pretty aggressive job at that. I just need to keep it at that. Mm-hmm. As well as I've toned back the applications. When I started 4 years ago, it was 90 or 85 applications. And there's not a magical number, but I do about 50, 55, just to keep it quality over quantity. A lot of people want to apply, but when it comes down to actually having a conversation and doing the writing and doing some of the homework, I say, I try to do a quality over quantity for applications.
Okay. And what do you think is the most important ingredient for a company to be successful? What have you seen that works? Is it based on the actual innovation? Is it based more around the application and the grant writing? What do you see as kind of being a secret ingredient to success?
Sure. So I've got a couple of secret sauces. I'll share with you. One is time, right? So not only does it take time to get the funding, it takes a lot of time beforehand to apply. So my secret is 12 to 15 weeks out to any deadline. And that's, I mean, life happens and it's busy. So that's not a hard and fast. The first few weeks of registration requirements, we help with all of that. We're trying to alleviate the pains of the federal process and have it be easy for the client, as well as coachability. So I work with a lot of clients who are very smart and teach in within faculty and have a PhD. But I'm looking for someone that's coachable and that will take the advice and the constructive criticism in a positive manner. We're not calling your baby ugly. We're saying this is not what they're looking for today. And so let us help you make it better. And so the first review is not from the National Science Foundation saying this is terrible and these are the reasons why. So time, coachability, and team, right? So I have to figure out, are you eligible? The PI or principal investigator must be a W-2 employee and spend most of the time within the company, being paid by the company. You know, if it's a startup and it's new, obviously on the project, so that's not a problem. There's money within the grant to pay for that. And so that's taken care of. But I need to make sure that you have someone that's going to lead the project, that's got some technical ability, as well as some credentials that when it's peer reviewed, it looks favorable upon. So team, time, and coachability are the top three things we look for.
Awesome. And kind of on the opposite end, when is it not a good fit to work with you?
So I turn, I suppose, people away. So it's not necessarily a timeline or anything on the TRL, the technology ready level. It's about, do you have a team? Do you have someone that's going to lead the project that can afford to not, you know, work at the university? As well as we get more into the innovation. Is NSF going to like this? Does this make sense for NIH? Or should you go a different route with state funding or VC or angel money? And so I try to take a really strategic approach from the beginning and not necessarily tell them no, but maybe I can't help you, but who else in my Rolodex or my network can help you? And so I would say the innovation doesn't make sense at that time. Or even sometimes you're too far along, right? You've got a product, you've got a physical product, and you just want to do some more product development. Well, you're not going to be able to sell your idea for government funding for more product development. They're looking for more R&D, more research and development. And what are you going to do on the beginning side? So some of my clients are too far along. I talked to actually a guy this morning who was too far along to apply to National Institutes of Health, but he had a great conversation with the program manager. And so that's great. He knows you're not going to apply in April, but something else down the line. They've been successful at National Science Foundation, so they'll come back with something else down the line.
Okay. So kind of going back a couple of steps, you were talking about the four platforms that kind of represent the biosciences. So what are specific challenges that entrepreneurs face within the bioscience space? Is there something that you notice versus different industries where, you know, granted, I know a lot of the entrepreneurs, there's going to be common challenges, but are there specific ones to the space that you work in?
Sure. So I'll give you my viewpoint on that. I would say some of it's timing, right? So you're trying to develop a vaccine for animal health, and that takes a long time, or an immunotherapeutic for a human, as well as a medical device, right? So we've got to go through FDA approval and those sorts of things. So it's totally different timeline. That takes a lot of time and a lot of money, and everyone says money too, but I'm going to go into the capital as well. And not the early stage capital where my program helps or VentureNet helps, but I'm talking, you know, $200,000 to 5 million or 2 million. Right. So stay tuned. There may be something looming in the future of helping with that gap later on. And so I would say timing, and people don't understand the timing, and then the funding as well.
Awesome. So now we're going to shift gears and talk about the startup and entrepreneurship community in Iowa. So I guess from your perspective, what do you think is working well? What do you see, whether that's day to day or if you kind of zoom out even from your experience being in this world probably over the last 10 years, what's working or what's changed?
So we'll start with the positive, what's working and what's changed. I think there's an actual ecosystem, right? There's a group of people that are building and connecting every day. And if I don't have it, Diana might have it. If Diana doesn't have it, Jeff Wood at Gravitate doesn't have it, and that sort of thing. So I think that's a good positive thing. I would see, and it's working, and people are moving here, especially also through the COVID. If I want to talk about that a little bit, people, you know, working remotely, or they're working, you know, here in Des Moines, even for a different company, but they're still spending their dollars here locally. They're buying coffee here. They're going to lunch here. They're potentially working at Gravitate or on Ingersoll, you know, here locally. They're raising their family here, going to school and art and all those sorts of wonderful things at Des Moines. The value and the cost of life here in Des Moines is wonderful. So I think that's starting to see on a national level as well. Some holes, I think, would be collaboration. And I mean that more in a broad sense. I think in Des Moines, they collaborate well. In Eastern Iowa, it collaborates well. In Northern Iowa, they collaborate well. In Western Iowa. But I think Iowa's only so big. And so, and I know Entrefest helps with this, right? Everyone come to a festival or to a conference, and that's wonderful, and that helps. I know BioConnect Iowa has created HighTechConnectIowa.org, I think is the website. And so we're looking for innovators, that are looking where to start, right? You just moved here, or you want to move here, or you moved here with your family and you're looking for something to do or how to get plugged in. So that's great. It's updated, it's customizable. It's sort of, the next level of Iowa Source Link. There's also Iowa Source Link out of UNI. That's wonderful. This is just more specific and an updated version of that, as well as Zainab. I think the work that you're doing is wonderful with your hot list and your survey. I've had a lot of my clients take that survey, a little extra nudge, and I hope they oblige. But I think Iowa is so small and so, or only so big. And so I think University of Iowa and Iowa State should connect more. Don't forget about UNI, as well as the community colleges. We have a really strong and a ton of community colleges within the state. And so if there could be more collaboration there, I think that would be powerful.
Mm-hmm. And I know you really wear like many hats, like whether that's being a champion or even more on this government economic development side of connecting high tech startups to the federal level and the agencies. I'm curious, like what would be on your wish list? Like whether that is through seeing more advancement from the federal level in supporting high tech growth companies, is there an area that we could still be doing more? Or even down to the local level? What would be on your wish list?
So I feel pretty positive about it. If I had a magic wand, what would I do? I think that just more conversations around, like yesterday or Wednesday, at Women Million Cups, we had a funding panel, right? So that's a great front door to having people come who've never been, people who come every week, people who come for the funding panel. So I think that's wonderful. I just think a wish list, continue to have conversations and events now that we're kind of, the COVID is lifting, and welcoming to people from every corner of the state and from every background, I think would be wonderful. And I think also going to an event that you may be not comfortable in, instead of always assuming that people are going to come to your event. I've been trying to do a better job at doing that, as well as telling our story. I think Iowa needs to do a better job at telling their story. I mean, IED does a great job. They have Travel Iowa and this beautiful, wonderful commercial that was shot in Clear Lake, which was really great. And the JPEG centers have so much going on, as well as BioConnect and the partnership. But I think overall, we could do a better job telling our story. And that's one of our goals in the next, 1 to 3 years of BioConnect Iowa. Who are we? What do we do? And not only what do we do, but how and why do we do it? Mm-hmm. And so to help us get on the national stage, and maybe even hosting a bigger conference. BioWorld Congress was here July of 2019, which is wonderful. There were people from all over the world came to Des Moines, and was really fun and enthusiastic. So maybe bidding for more conferences and in-person events as the world starts shaping up.
Mm-hmm. I know I was at an event yesterday with the Carbon Economy Summit. You were there as well.
Sure.
Yeah. And what I kind of noticed is that change happens when you have a conversation. And that was specifically around a newer, I guess, industry as we're learning more, even on the environmental side and carbon emissions, carbon reduction and removal. How do you do all that? Which I'm sure could also fall right into what BioConnect Iowa, some of those technologies. I know you already are working with some of those companies. But it did just get me thinking that, you know, we were doing it at a local level with that event, but how eventually we could make Iowa known for much more in what we do and in innovation, and particularly with startups and entrepreneurs living here and having a great life. But playing much bigger and telling the story much bigger and loudly and proud as well. So that's, I think, on the back of a lot of people's minds is how do we start to do that collectively telling the story. So if you ever have ideas, I'm curious, yeah. as even telling the stories of success from the companies that you are working with and highlighting those on a reoccurring basis, I think is really important, critical.
Yeah. And something else that's exciting, Diana, SBIR is going to be 40 in July. That's, ooh. I mean, not old, but that's like significant. And I still think a lot of people don't know about it. So
do you know, could you, I know we didn't start with it, but do you know the origin story? Because I don't think a lot of people do know that.
I
and
do.
And if you can kind of highlight in pieces of it, well, hey, that's what the podcast is for. We got a couple of minutes. If you can kind of highlight how it got started. Or that could be for the next
That'll show. Be for next time. That'll be for next show. Maybe we could come back to the good old, for a birthday party in July. My birthday is also in July, so I'm very excited.
Okay.
The founder of the SBIR program, I'll give you a little snippet here, is called Roland Tibbetts. And there's also the Tibbetts Award is back. And so if anyone's listening or wants to be nominated, I'm happy to nominate a wonderful startup. Experience himself, for himself, how the government programs can affect individuals. So President, Roosevelt signed a GI Bill into law in 1944. So that's old, not as old as this, but it's been part of congressional mandated R&D for 40 years since 1982.
And I just know.
And my consultant has been working in it the entire time. So he'd be a great person to have on the podcast as well.
Yeah. And I just know, because I read it in a book called Loon Shots. It actually talked about the origin story of the whole federal innovation platform and why it was created. So I'd encourage people too, that even that's a great book that talks about why certain things either get disrupted, whether it's in big agencies or whether it's to a small company. It's a great read. But yeah, so we're going to kind of final call the what you want people to know, Annie, whether that's about SBIR and the SCTR platform, or just what's your final thoughts as we close down?
My final thoughts are, I think we need to have more conversations and collaborate. You know, entrepreneurs build in a silo. Sort of my program is also a little bit siloed, but we're getting out there. And we need to, I think, collaborate to tell our story, just tell our story better and have more people move here and make it a better place than it actually is. So that would be, those would be my closing thoughts, as well as I've been thinking about this a lot lately. You didn't wake up to be mediocre today. And so as I got out of bed and it's freezing and it just snowed, which I think is beautiful. I didn't wake up today to be mediocre, hopefully to try to make the world a better place, one conversation or one, little thing at a time.
Well, thank you, Annie, for being on today. And how can people reach out to you or find more information?
Sure, absolutely. BioConnectIowa.org. I'm at 1 Million Cups every Wednesday at Downtown Gravitate. Give a little shout out to that. Or email Anne, A-N-N-E, at BioConnect, iowa.org. And I'm around. I'm kind of here, there, and everywhere. Offices in downtown Des Moines. So happy to connect and meet with some new people.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Diana. This is a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to Small Business and Startup Stories DSM. Inspired by these stories, we offer a hub full of resources needed for any small business owner to grow and succeed in Greater Des Moines, Iowa at dsmpartnership.com/small business. Thank you for listening.